Taking control of and improving your health requires the most relevant and timely health information available. And University Medical Center is here to help with facts and advice about important health topics that you care about. We know that your health matters. I'm Dr. Richard Friend, and today we welcome Dr. Brittany Anderson, a family medicine physician who practices at University Medical Center in Demopolis, caring for patients in a region of the state known as the Black Belt. She has a number of patients with COVID-19 who, because of their underlying health conditions, often experience more adverse outcomes. She explains that those underlying conditions are the result of a critical shortage of healthcare in the Black Belt. Let's listen as Dr. Anderson talks about the awareness that COVID-19 has again shown on the serious health disparities that exist in Alabama's Black Belt and what can be done to try to improve the situation. Welcome to this special edition of Health Matters with your host, Leslie Skiner.
We are here today with Dr. Brittany Anderson, who is an assistant professor of family, internal, and rural medicine at the University of Alabama College of Community Health Sciences. Dr. Anderson is also a practicing family medicine physician who cares for patients at University Medical Center's Demopolis location. And University Medical Center is operated by the College of Community Health Sciences. In addition to Demopolis, University Medical Center also has locations in Tuscaloosa and Northport, Alabama. So welcome, Dr. Anderson, and thank you for being here today for this special topic podcast. The focus of our discussion today is COVID-19, health disparities, and the Alabama Black Belt. So first, let's get started by you telling us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? Those kind of things.
Okay, great. And thanks for having me, of course. So I grew up on a small family farm in Autauga County. I can pretty well trace my family back there through my great-grandparents, and we have a little patch of land there that my family worked as slaves and sharecropped. And my great-grandfather in the late 30s and 40s saved up enough to purchase that land. So really important and special tie to the land and to my family that we have there. So went through public school system in Autauga County, graduated from there, and actually went to Duke in Durham, North Carolina for my undergrad studies. After that, came back to Alabama, to the University of Alabama, and I did a graduate program, the Rural Medical Scholars Program, which really helped to immerse me in all things rural Alabama and rural medicine. Upon completion of that, I entered UAB for medical school, came back and did my third and fourth years here in Tuscaloosa, and then stayed in Tuscaloosa for my family medicine residency. So that's been my path up until now, and practicing now in Demopolis in Marengo County, as well as working with the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa.
And some of the things that you do for the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa are specifically for the College of Community Health Sciences. Is that correct?
Exactly. That's right.
And that involves teaching medical students who are doing their third and fourth years of medical school at the college, their clinical training years, I think that's what they call it, and then teaching resident physicians as well.
Exactly. And so, as I mentioned, I was one of those students who came back to Tuscaloosa for my third and fourth year and did my residency here. So I'm in this unique position that now I'm able to help teach and train medical students and residents during that part of their training. So, yes, in addition to practicing in clinic in Demopolis, I'm really blessed and fortunate to be able to help train the future physicians and healthcare professionals.
And the Demopolis location that is part of University Medical Center and where you practice, that is located in Marengo County. Is that correct?
Right. That is Marengo County in the western part of Alabama's Black Belt.
Okay. And that is considered one of the Black Belt counties here in Alabama.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about the Black Belt region in terms of where it is located in the state of Alabama? I know it extends beyond the state of Alabama, but here in Alabama, kind of what counties comprise the Black Belt?
Right. So you're absolutely right. It does extend beyond Alabama, actually spans kind of from Texas through to Virginia. And overall, there are reports that there are upwards of 200 counties that are included in the Black Belt in this country. In Alabama, in particular, interestingly, the counties that define the Black Belt are not set in stone or widely agreed upon, which in itself is a little bit of a concern as we start to think about resources and how we should be counting facts and figures related to the Black Belt and distributing resources. But historically, I think we can all agree in the following counties being in the Black Belt. And so if you can think of kind of a span or a stretch of land from the west to the east of the state, starting with your Sumter, Choctaw, Greene, and Hale counties in Marengo County, over to the west, getting more central, your Perry County, Dallas County, Wilcox and Lowndes County, as well as Butler and Crenshaw counties, and then going more east, Macon, Bullock, Pike, Russell, and Barber counties. So those traditionally make up the counties of the Black Belt. Montgomery traditionally is included as well. Montgomery being our state's capital doesn't have some of the significant disparities and other things that we'll talk about, you know, through the rest of this conversation and that we talk about in general related to the Black Belt.
And so the Black Belt, if you were trying to visualize it, it's kind of like a crescent shape that spans the width of the state of Alabama.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. And can you explain to our listeners, in case they might not know, where that name came from, the Alabama Black Belt? And I think it's changed over time, its meaning.
Exactly. You're exactly right. So the Black Belt, as it's termed, was originally named such for this highly fertile, dark black topsoil that was found in the region of those counties that we just mentioned. This, you know, highly fertile soil made the region very prosperous during slavery, as it was great ground for growing cotton. So as you can imagine, in times of slavery, it was definitely an area that was densely populated by Black people. And so as you talk about, the title has morphed over time into its definition. Today, this area is also really, you know, aptly named, I believe, for the predominance of Black people who live in this area, as it is still home to many ancestors of those who were slaves and were sharecroppers on this land, who did not move during, you know, Great Migration or other times in the country's past where you've seen a migration of people. So still in this area of the Black Belt, you do have a significant proportion of Black people living in those areas.
And can you kind of paint a picture for us, or help us visualize what it's like in the Alabama Black Belt, what it's like for the people who live there in terms of the economy and in terms of healthcare and the availability and accessibility to healthcare there?
Right, absolutely. So to begin to answer that question, I'll say that the Black Belt of Alabama has beautiful stretches of land, land that you can drive for miles and miles and not see a house or a human on your trek. The Black Belt is home to a really rich history in this country, a rich history for all of us. I believe that most Black Alabamians and truly many Black Americans can trace their family's history back to this or to similar regions in our country. The Black Belt is home to really historic places like Selma's Edmund Pettus Bridge, of course, and other, you know, nationally known areas that were significant during the civil rights changes. There were so many changes that were birthed in areas like the Black Belt. But just as many of these civil rights victories as were birthed there, there was also a lot of pain birthed in the Black Belt, right? And a lot of that pain, as you were starting to mention, is still there in the Black Belt today. So you mentioned kind of economically where we are in the Black Belt. And unfortunately, Alabama's Black Belt is home to some of the poorest counties in the state and truly some of the poorest counties in the nation as well. You know, reports from as late as last year in 2019 showed that Black Belt counties have upwards of 40% of the population living below the federal poverty line. 40%. I mean, that's incredible. These high poverty rates are driven by lack of access to jobs, you know, few businesses and large corporations or factories that are interested in coming to areas where there's still such a need for improving, you know, healthcare and education and access to technology. So all of those things drive some of the poverty that we see in the area. In terms of health, you know, for many reasons, there's a disproportionate tenor to the chronic health conditions that we see among patients in the Black Belt. We see a higher prevalence of chronic things like diabetes and hypertension and heart disease and lung disease compared to other parts of the state. And of course, this is compounded by stressors that could lead to poor health outcomes like poverty and lack of insurance and not having stable employment, poor access to healthy foods and parks and walking spaces and issues with transportation. And those are all things that we term our social determinants of health, right? So these conditions that, or the conditions in which people are born, work, and live that affect their overall health. We're still, unfortunately, at a place where, you know, being born in some Black Belt counties gives you a lower, simply being born there gives you a lower life expectancy than being born in some of the world's developing countries. So those are things that we have to make some significant changes to in order to improve the overall health of the state.
And those lower life expectancies that you mentioned, that is a result of those social determinants of health that you mentioned that exist in the Black Belt region.
Absolutely. So, you know, health in general is so important, but we have to realize there's so many things that play also into what makes a person healthy. And it's, you know, absolutely those things that we mentioned, like poverty and, you know, poor access to education and other resources, all those things which definitely play a role in health and poor health outcomes.
And what about access to health care in that region for the people who live there? How prevalent are clinics and doctor's offices and hospitals?
So, I mean, that's a great question. You know, access to health care in the Black Belt is something that I am really passionate about. And honestly, it's what I've decided to dedicate my career to. There is a significant shortage of physicians and healthcare providers in all of rural Alabama, but this is especially significant in the Black Belt. It's no different. And in addition to the shortage of providers, we also have a shortage of or lack of access. So let's take labor and delivery, for example. So currently, Dallas County is the only county in the Black Belt, you know, with Montgomery kind of being an exception. But Dallas County, the only county in the Black Belt over the span of those 17 counties that we mentioned that has a labor and delivery unit. And so in only one of those 17 counties that we talked about outside of Montgomery, can you deliver a baby in a hospital that is equipped with a labor and delivery unit? So with a unit that is set up in order to have women deliver babies in a healthy way. And so now we have these pregnant women who we've already talked about in general are at higher risk for diabetes and hypertension and these chronic issues that only compound or only compounded in pregnancy. These are women that we're asking to drive an hour, sometimes an hour and a half, sometimes up to 2 hours to deliver a baby. And so when we look at that, that it lends to issues of, perinatal mortality. So we see morbidity and mortality. We see death of babies and death of moms. And these are things that if we had better access to labor and delivery units and hospitals in general in the Black Belt and rural places across the state, we should not see similar numbers.
And I would imagine, too, then it's not just lack of access to, it's not only lack of access to labor and delivery units, it's lack of access to care during pregnancy and prior to pregnancy or early in pregnancy, what we know as prenatal care.
Exactly. And so that access to prenatal care is so important. We do have in our clinic in Demopolis, we're really fortunate to have some family medicine / OB providers. And so my partners in clinic provide prenatal care. So again, we're very fortunate to be able to see women during their pregnancy up until delivery. But again, we're asking those women then to drive, you know, an hour and a half to deliver their babies. And so we are making steps in the right direction. We just have to put the pieces together to finish out the journey. And that's just talking about labor and delivery. We unfortunately are seeing a trend in hospital closures in rural parts of the state, and that has not spared the Black Belt either. This furthers the distance that people with true emergencies, people who are having heart attacks or having strokes or having emergencies that are time dependent, and it's furthering the distance that they have to go to receive health care. So that covers kind of hospitals a little bit. And again, it's my soapbox. So I'll move off of it into my next soapbox, which is the low prevalence of medical clinics and providers in the area. So like I mentioned earlier, there's a general shortage of physicians, particularly primary care physicians in the state. And this is only magnified in the Black Belt. We talked about the chronic conditions like hypertension and diabetes that plague this region, conditions that are, you know, preventable and even once diagnosed, are controllable if you have appropriate access to care, which unfortunately, because of lack of access to providers, many inhabitants of the Black Belt just unfortunately don't have. This extends beyond primary care when you think about the need for specialist intervention in some of these cases. So say that you need to, you know, see cardiologist, or you need to see, you know, a cardiothoracic surgeon or a GI doctor or a specialist. Just like we're telling those women who need to get to a labor and delivery hospital, you're asking patients sometimes to travel hours upon hours sometimes to get to a specialist. And unfortunately, sometimes transportation is already an issue for many. So this is a, you know, truly a problem. The access to healthcare is truly a problem that is multifaceted, but really is something that we have to address. I believe that all the pieces of the puzzle to improving the Black Belt have to be addressed, and health is one of the big pieces of the puzzle. Because if we can't address the health issues and access to health, then that doesn't leave us a Black Belt to fix at all.
You talked about the scarcity of hospitals in the Black Belt region and also the scarcity of clinics and healthcare professionals. Why is that the case? Why aren't there hospitals and clinics and doctors and nurses in the numbers that need to be there?
Right. So I think that when we talk about closures of hospitals, you know, funding is definitely an issue there, right? So being able to appropriately fund hospitals, allow them to stay open and to be productive. When we look at providers, number of healthcare providers, whether those are physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, and just healthcare workers in general, we see, unfortunately, there's this continued shortage. It's present in all of rural Alabama, but as I mentioned, it's really significant in the Black Belt. And in my opinion, there are several reasons for this. One, you know, I think that it takes someone who truly has a heart and a passion for rural and underserved medicine and for treating patients who fit in this underserved population, because there is a level of needing to kind of take extra steps to meet needs when you have a higher proportion of patients who have hypertension or diabetes or heart disease or lung disease. Sometimes that puts a little bit extra pressure on the physician to be able to address those things. There also, though, unfortunately, we run into, like I mentioned earlier, exposure. So an issue of exposure and people who just don't realize that the need is there and that these are places where they could really impact change. More socially, I think, and what we hear from those who are training is that they just don't have a connection to the area, right? And so if you are asking, you know, a young new physician to go into a Black Belt area to practice, as I mentioned to you earlier, if there are issues of education, issues of, you know, poor school systems, issues with, you know, poverty, some areas that don't have you know, grocery stores or access to fresh foods and vegetables, it's hard to sometimes attract physicians and healthcare providers to those areas when they have to think about providing for their own families and what their lives will be like. There are so many pushes across the state to gather folks, children, youth from these rural areas who have an interest in medicine. And so I think my story is one that's similar to that. You know, I grew up in a rural area. I knew that I had this interest and this passion for medicine, and there are programs along the way that were able to help me nurture that interest. And then I turned around at the end of my training and went back into these rural places to practice and underserved places to practice. So there definitely is a niche that is there that needs to be filled. I think that we can continue our work as those who train future physicians to cultivate and encourage that desire to go into rural areas like the Black Belt to practice.
And the University of Alabama has some of those programs that work to recruit students from rural communities across the state who might have an interest in medicine or in the healthcare profession, and train them when they are of college age. They bring them to the university and work to educate and train them in rural medicine with the hope that they will go back to these areas and practice.
Absolutely. And so that program is available at the University of Alabama. There are other similar programs throughout the state. And again, those programs are invaluable when we talk about being able to really train up physicians who will go into, and healthcare professionals in general, who will go into the Black Belt, because that's what we're going to need to make a change. As I mentioned, we're going to need healthcare professionals to go into these areas, but we've also got to pull those other pieces of the puzzle together so that when you get a healthcare provider there, that they're not there just for, a short period of time, but that they are able to stay there in the community for a long period of time and do the most good for those communities.
And I would imagine access to health insurance is another significant barrier.
Absolutely. Well. Absolutely. And so it's one thing to have physicians or healthcare providers in an area. And it's another thing if you have people in that area who can't afford to go. Right. And so unfortunately, we are in a state that has made the decision up until now not to expand Medicaid. And that truly that leaves out a lot of people across the state. A lot of people in rural Alabama in general, but particularly it really hardly hits the Black Belt. And again, when you've got an area and a portion of people who already are at higher risk because of other social determinants of health, like we talked about, we have to be able to provide access to health care. And again, the number of physicians there doesn't matter as much. The amount being able to have transportation doesn't matter as much if you don't have insurance in order to go in the first place.
And for the people who live in the Black Belt, it sounds like it's a situation where there is not enough availability of health care. So they don't have access to doctors and doctor's offices, which means they may not have access to screening for chronic conditions or cancer. And if there aren't specialists there, then they don't have access to that kind of care if those screening tests come back with some not so positive results for them. So things that some people might take for granted, being able to go to the doctor whenever they're sick, being able to get a mammogram or a colonoscopy, that's just incredibly difficult in the Black Belt.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I mean, statewide, if we look at the Black Belt and compare it to other places in the state, there's a disproportionate number of deaths that occur in the Black Belt from cancers that we can and cancers that we should be able to screen against. So like you mentioned, breast cancer, colon cancer, cervical cancer. But if you don't have access to a primary care physician, because one, there are few or none in your area, or two, you don't have transportation to get to them, or three, you don't have insurance in order to be able to go in to be seen. If you don't have access, you can't get this screening. And that truly leaves you at the mercy of what really are preventable, catchable, and treatable illnesses that unfortunately will lead to death.
That leads us into what the state and the country and actually the world are dealing with now. And that is the COVID-19 pandemic. And that has hit areas across the country and across the world hard, but the virus has hit areas like the Black Belt, like Alabama's Black Belt region, particularly hard. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So unfortunately, we've seen throughout the country that COVID-19 is disproportionately affecting African Americans. This is no different in Alabama, and it's certainly no different in the Black Belt. The African American population in Alabama makes up more than one third of the COVID-19 cases and more than 45% of deaths, which is significantly disproportionate to the number of people living in the state. And so, as we mentioned, the Black Belt counties each have significant percentages of Black residents. So naturally, you can assume that the number of cases and deaths in the Black Belt is much higher. And again, that's something that we have to address. And in the midst of kind of COVID-19, which has really started to shed light on some of the healthcare disparities in this country, we're seeing the same in viewing the healthcare disparities in the Black Belt and the differences that are there.
And I would imagine that some of the experiences that residents in the Black Belt are having or were having pre-COVID with lack of access to healthcare, and which may exacerbate underlying health conditions, chronic health conditions like diabetes and hypertension, cardiovascular disease, that has made COVID even more impactful to them in a negative way, because they and tell me if that's correct, maybe with those underlying conditions and not being able to be treated for those. And then if they were to contract the COVID virus, they're at risk for maybe having a more severe case or illness resulting from the virus and maybe even more susceptible to death.
Absolutely. I mean, you hit it dead on head. So, you know, as previously mentioned, the chronic conditions, this increased prevalence of diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, lung disease, all these things put you at risk for having bad outcomes. And we see that magnified with COVID-19. Absolutely.
And in your practice at University Medical Center in Demopolis, which is located in Marengo County, which is in the Black Belt, what are you seeing in terms of the patients that you care for there in Demopolis? Are you seeing patients with COVID-19? And I imagine that you're probably caring for patients who have a lot of these chronic conditions as a result of lack of access to care in the areas and the communities where they live.
Absolutely. So we are testing there in Demopolis and are definitely still seeing, you know, positive cases, have been seeing positive cases throughout COVID-19. We unfortunately are seeing deaths related within our patient population as well. But you're absolutely right. We survey a population of patients who are at high risk. And so, you know, at every visit, I'm reminding patients, make sure you have your masks on at all times. Make sure that everyone that is around you has a mask on, because again, in these areas, we just are at higher risk for bad outcomes related to COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. And I want to circle back for a minute. Now that we've talked about COVID-19, and we have seen recently more in the news, both in state news, local news, state news, and national news, about the impact of COVID-19 on areas where health disparities exist. But I want to broaden this for our listeners and talk more about health disparities in general. We did touch on that at the beginning of this discussion, but I want to circle back to that now, because I think COVID-19, since it's kind of shown a light on this, to talk about this important topic of health disparities. So first, if you can explain to listeners just what is meant by the term health disparities.
Absolutely. So my definition, or my way to define health disparities, simply is differences in health and health outcomes between groups. And usually these are related to differences in social, economic, and environmental disadvantages. And so using this definition, again, so differences in health and health outcomes between groups, you can see how the Black Belt, with the disadvantages and inequities that are already there, are a perfect setup, if you will, for health disparities.
And this region has been dealing with health disparities or suffering from health disparities for a long, long time. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I think there are many reasons for this. You know, I don't think that health disparities exist separate from other issues, like we've talked about, other issues like poverty and lack of access to education or transportation or community infrastructure or those type things. But they do all coincide and kind of create this perfect storm that leads to the continued health disparities and poor health outcomes. So, for example, you know, talk to students or sometimes our training residents, I'll give them an example of a scenario that folks within the Black Belt and even some of my patients in clinic face. So if I can't find a job in my community because there are no big businesses or no plants that are interested in coming there, or if they do come there, I'm not appropriately trained to be able to learn to work a job there. If I can't afford a car because I don't have a job that will pay me enough that I can have the luxury of having a car, so I have to pay someone to drive me to your office for their appointment. When you get to that appointment, you tell me that I have diabetes or I have high blood pressure, and you give me a prescription for medicine, and you tell me to get more exercise, and you tell me to eat more fresh fruit and vegetables. And then you send me home to a town, and there are towns in the Black Belt that don't have any well-lit parks for me to walk in, that don't have good sidewalks for me to be able to walk along, or towns that don't have a grocery store for me to be able to buy fresh fruit and vegetables. And you give me a prescription for a medicine that I can't afford, that I have to decide, am I going to buy this medicine or am I going to buy food? And I don't understand why you're giving me this medicine in the first place. And so so that creates a cycle. And in that cycle, you then, as a provider, expect me to come back to you in 3 months to follow up on this and to make these changes that are not realistic for me to make in the first place based on where I live. And so that's something we have to look at, systemic issues. We've got to look at the overall picture and we've got to start making changes accordingly.
In terms of medical student and resident education, and you have been both a medical student and a resident physician, are these topics touched on or talked about or part of the curriculum in medical school and in residency programs, health disparities and the different and the impacts that can have on populations?
So it is, and it's becoming more increasingly more commonly taught throughout the state, which is something that we really have to continue to make an effort to do. We in Alabama and the medical schools in Alabama have students who come from within the state and from outside of the state. And I think that we would be doing a disservice to those students and a disservice to our residents and future training physicians and healthcare providers if we didn't expose them to the Black Belt, expose and introduce them to the Black Belt and to areas of Alabama in general, other rural areas that have needs. Because as we're training these students and training these residents in the state, we should be able to produce physicians and healthcare providers who will stay in the state to practice medicine and not so much stay in your highly populated urban areas, but will really get out into parts of the state, like rural and Black Belt counties, and do the work that is needed there. So we are making strides in that direction, but there certainly is much more work that we can do and should do to introduce and expose our training future physicians and healthcare professionals in general to the need in such areas.
And you're very knowledgeable about the Black Belt and obviously are very interested in that region and the people who live there and in providing healthcare for them and very passionate about it. How did you become interested in this particular region and the health challenges that the people who live there face? And also too, you chose medicine as a profession, but in particular, you chose family medicine. So if you can touch on that as well, why you decided to choose family medicine?
Absolutely. So I'll start with that second question of family medicine. Like many people who interview for medical school at your interview, they ask you why you want to be a physician and you say, because you want to help people. And I often laughed at that response because there are so many professions that we could take where we could choose to help people. As a child, my parents say that I always said that I wanted to be a physician and be a doctor and never changed my mind. So I stuck with that. But as time went on, that desire to help people turned in desire to be a physician turned into a desire to work with folks who needed me the most, to work in underserved areas. And my decision to practice family medicine was birthed from that, because I knew that in order to be able to provide the most help and, in my opinion, do the most good, I needed to have a broad background, a broad spectrum of training that would allow me to do a little bit of everything. So as a family medicine physician, some of us do prenatal care. I see newborns, I see kids, young kids, I see adolescents, adults, elderly patients. So it really allows me or affords me the opportunity to see a wide range of people and, again, do the most good in the community in which I work. Related to the passion, where my passion comes from. So honestly, I mentioned to you earlier kind of my family's background and where I grew up on a, small dirt road family farm in Autauga County. And I see myself and I see my family members in my patients in the communities of the region. So as a Black female in a profession that is still overwhelmingly short of Black physicians compared to the population, and having been trained in a way that allows me to recognize the need and lack of resources in the Black Belt, at this point in my career, I really feel like it's where I'm needed most. So the passion is renewed every day.
And finally, to kind of to bring this discussion to a closure, we've talked about the Alabama Black Belt region and some of the significant challenges that the region faces, both economically and particularly in terms of healthcare, and how that impacts the people who live there in terms of their quality of life, their length of life. Can anything be done to reduce some of these health disparities in the Black Belt region, or to mitigate some of them, or ideally to eliminate them? What is it going to take?
You know, I think that these healthcare disparities that we see in Alabama's Black Belt can be mitigated and hopefully, you know, in the future eliminated. There are some people who may say that that is not realistic, but I think it can be done. But it's going to take a large scale group effort. And that effort has to start from the top. So it has to start with our state government leadership, with universities, with corporations, but then it also has to hit home. It has to be, you know, we have to have community buy-in, and some of the changes that are made really have to be community-led and community-driven in order to really truly understand the need and to make appropriate strides in meeting those needs. So these disparities are a problem that we, as a state, we can't in good conscience allow them to continue. And ask what I think it will take to accomplish this. So I think it's, you know, just like conversations that we're having today. So, and like we talked about with medical students and training future healthcare providers and really anyone who will listen, right? So it's continued attention and education and awareness that's going to lead to policy change, that's going to lead to appropriate funding and infrastructure development and changes. And, you know, from a healthcare standpoint, it also has to include training future healthcare professionals who have a passion and a desire to practice in the Black Belt, to practice in rural Alabama, and to really spark change.
And it's evident that you have that passion. You are both practicing in the Black Belt of Alabama as a family medicine physician, and you are also teaching residents and medical students at the University of Alabama as well. So I imagine some of the passion that you have for this particular topic and these issues can resonate with them as well, and hopefully encourage them to spend some time or spend their careers practicing in the Black Belt. I can imagine that that's probably very fulfilling work.
Absolutely. It definitely is. It's fulfilling. I love the opportunity to be able to talk with your future healthcare professionals, so training medical students and residents and mid-level providers to, one, open their eyes to the needs that are there in the Black Belt. And then, you know, there's the moment where you see that they really start to get it and understand. And the hope is that if we can continue to expose students and expose those who are training, then we really will start to increase the number of providers who are there. But again, it goes back to all those other things, all those other pieces of the puzzle that must fit together. Also, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic has certainly put a spotlight on some of the health disparities and inequities and brought conversations similar to the one we're having today about the need to improve the overall health of the Black Belt and to bring some of these issues to the forefront. But these are issues that we've been having for decades, right? And so conversations that we, you know, had 20 years ago before COVID-19, we're not in a position where we can still be having those same conversations 20 years from now. So there are definitely or certainly changes that need to be made. And I think that we are hopefully getting to a prime time in our state and in our country where we're able to start making those changes.
Well, I hope so. And I appreciate you joining us today to talk about this very important topic. And I hope that discussions about health disparities and about health disparities in the Black Belt will continue, and that together we can make strides to try to reduce and mitigate some of these health disparities in the Black Belt and improve the quality of life and the length of life for the people who live there. Thank you, Dr. Anderson.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
To learn more from us about these and other important health topics, visit umc.ua.edu. And for all your primary health care needs, visit University Medical Center with locations in Tuscaloosa, Northport, and Demopolis.